Shalom, welcome to AshJTF. This is Chaim ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha bat Shlomo, Pesach ben Dov, Meir ben Yecheskel, Yosef ben Meir, and Melech ben Avraham, and also dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery, for Robert Mittman. We're going to be discussing Paul Ryan and the selection of Congressman Paul Ryan as Mitt Romney's running mate and the implications in this election. After that, of course, we're going to be answering the questions from our great JTF members, and I see that there are a lot of great questions for this week's program. But first, let's talk about this very important historic event. Governor Mitt Romney has decided to select as his running mate for Vice President Congressman Paul Ryan. First, let me say I am relieved. It's not that Paul Ryan was my first choice. He was not. My first choice was Mike Huckabee, because Mike Huckabee is the most fervent defender of Israel and supporter of Israel that we could get. He is an evangelical Christian who really believes in his Bible and really supports Israel and the Jewish people the way an American leader or a leader of any nation should be doing. But I'm relieved. I knew that Huckabee wasn't going to be picked, and I'm relieved that the pick was Paul Ryan for a number of reasons. First of all, thank God that Mitt Romney did not pick an unacceptable vice presidential candidate like the Muslim-loving, Jew-hating Chris Christie, or the Muslim-loving, Jew-hating David Petraeus, who as a general spent his time blaming Israel for everything that went wrong in Afghanistan and Iraq. And he's now the CIA director under Barack Hussein Osama. Thank God Mitt Romney didn't pick one of those or pick Congolese Rice, another Jew hater. Instead, he chose Congressman Paul Ryan. Only time will tell if this pick was one that will help the Republican ticket. I happen to think it was a wise move on his part, because the polls were showing that Mitt Romney was losing. This past week, about I think three or four polls were released, at least three, maybe four were released, showing that Mitt Romney was 7 to 9% behind Barack Hussein Obama. Now, Barack Hussein Obama beat John McCain by 7 points in 2008. So a 7-point lead is a big lead. That's a big victory. And the polls were showing that it was coming to the point, because of Barack Hussein Obama's demagogic attacks on Mitt Romney and his lying attacks on Mitt Romney, the polls were showing that Obama was pulling ahead to the point where he was doing better against Romney than he did against McCain. So this was beginning to look like it wasn't even going to be a close election, like Obama was going to win by a big margin. Because Obama keeps lying and demagoguing, and Mitt Romney was defensive and didn't answer properly, in my opinion. And I mean, what he should do is go after Barack Hussein Obama's Islamic past. He should go after Obama on all the issues that we've been going after Obama on our great videos. If they follow JTF's strategy of going after Obama, Obama would be in a lot of trouble. The media would be screaming and everybody would be saying McCarthyism and Islamophobia and all this other nonsense. But the American people would overwhelmingly be supporting Mitt Romney. And I could cite other elections, many other elections in history where that happened, where the media was going crazy, and yet the candidate that the media was condemning hysterically wound up winning and winning big. But anyway, Romney, of course, doesn't have the guts to do that. He's an establishment guy. He's not going to do that. So he was playing defense, and he was falling behind. And we were in a lot of trouble. He now picked Paul Ryan. That has changed the conversation and changed the dynamics of the campaign. Hopefully he's going to get a big boost out of this, God willing, I hope so. And by the way, make no mistake about it, this is still a very tough election. You know what they're going to do to Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan. They're going to say Paul Ryan advocated gutting Medicare, even though Barack Hussein Obama took $700 billion out of Medicare to help fund his socialist takeover of the healthcare system known as Obamacare. Barack Hussein Obama took $700 billion from Medicare, stole $700 billion out of Medicare, in order to put it into Obamacare, because Barack Hussein Obama wants to take money from the elderly in order to fund lazy bums on welfare and food stamps and other programs that never worked and don't want to work. Those are the people that Obama wants to enrich with the money of people who do work hard. That really is the Obama program. He is the food stamp president. He increased the number of people on food stamps in this country from 27 million to 43 million in just 3.5 years. He's gutting all welfare reform that has been in place since the 1990s. The work requirements in welfare reform, he is gutting and getting rid of. And Mitt Romney ran a commercial on that. It was too mild, but he ran a commercial on that, and it is true that that is what Obama wants to do, and that is what he's trying to do. In any event, Paul Ryan has been an advocate for taking some unpopular stands and taking a tough position on cutting deficit spending and on cutting the debt. He has proposed a multi-trillion dollar reduction in the increases in spending that have been taking place in Washington. And that is the minimum that America has to do if America wants to survive fiscally. Paul Ryan has had the courage to take some unpopular stands on that issue. Now, the conservatives now are going to be thrilled that he's on the ticket, because he has been pushing for real deep cuts in the entitlement spending programs, necessary cuts that are necessary for the very survival of the United States, of the fiscal solvency and survival of the United States. But you know that Obama and the Democrats and the left-wing news media are going to be demagoguing that. They're going to be saying that he wants to destroy Medicare and that he wants to destroy Social Security. Of course, the truth is Obama will destroy Medicare and Social Security because they're going to go bankrupt under Obama. Everything is going to go bankrupt under Obama. If we continue to have $1.3 trillion deficits every year, everything will go bankrupt. This country will become another Greece. But there'll be a big difference. Greece has the European Union to bail them out. Nobody can bail out the United States. The United States is too big. So America is finished if Obama's reelected. He will destroy this country, and he'll destroy Social Security and destroy Medicare and destroy all these other programs that he demagogically claims to be defending. He's so full of baloney. He is destroying everything he touches with his socialist budget-busting, insane programs of massive government, massive bureaucracy, massive regulation, massive red tape, and the strangulation of free enterprise and free markets and small businesses in the United States. The strangulation of the middle class, which he is going to turn into a nation of poor people. This will become a nation of poor people by the time he's finished. Paul Ryan has attempted to address these issues honestly and has come under tremendous attack for it. Mitt Romney actually surprised me and showed that he has some guts in choosing Paul Ryan. That took some guts. That was a bold move. He could have picked a safe candidate, a safe establishment type, but he picked Paul Ryan, and that's a controversial pick, and that took some guts. So I'm actually relieved that Paul Ryan is the candidate. I still think we have a tough battle ahead of us. I still think we have a tough uphill fight ahead of us, and I want to remind JTFers that 90% of the news media in this country are going to lie, cheat, and distort to reelect Obama. That means that the good things that you hear about Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan on Fox News are not going to be heard by the vast majority of American voters. The vast majority of American voters do not watch Fox and do not listen to Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity or talk radio. Unfortunately, the vast majority of Americans don't see JTF's videos, which are the best anti-Obama videos on the internet. And so we got a real tough fight ahead of us. Let's understand that, a real tough fight. It's an uphill battle. So I appeal to all of our great JTFers. Get involved with us. Help us. Our videos are the best anti-Obama videos anywhere. The strongest and the best. Help us spread those videos all over the place. Help us when we upload videos. I'm going to be uploading another video in another day or two. We're constantly working on new videos. Shlomo is the one who deserves the credit for this. He does incredibly professional, brilliant work on these videos. And we expose issues that nobody else exposes. Help us. Help us spread the word. because if Obama's reelected, God forbid, then we're in a lot of trouble, and we're going to regret it. God forbid that we shouldn't live to see that day. If he's reelected and doesn't have to face the voters again, it's going to be an unbelievable nightmare, especially for Israel and the Jewish people, but also for America. It's going to be an unbelievable nightmare. So we better start working here. If you sincerely are worried about the future of America, Israel, and the rest of the world, as I believe you are if you're with JTF, because otherwise I don't think you would join our forum, I urge you to actually do things. There are many things you can do. The most important thing, of course, is helping us financially. That is the best thing that anybody can do. The more money we have, the further our message gets. That we urgently need more contributions. We're not getting anywhere near what we need to run the type of campaign that we want to run. So the first thing we need is financial support. We're actually bleeding right now because we have an employee. We have Shlomo is our only employee, and he's taken a big cut in pay. But you know, we've got all types of expenses, and our budget is very limited. And we do things to help the people in Israel. So we're actually bleeding right now financially. So we need all the help we can get. Please, if people can help us financially, you can do it with your credit card. It's very convenient. You go to jtf.org, which is our main page. It's very convenient. You click on the Donate Now button on jtf.org. You'll find the Donate Now button on top. And it's very easy and very convenient and very secure. We don't see your credit card information. Nobody sees it. It's a very secure, insured company that does the process, that goes through the process for us. And you're helping, and it's very easy and convenient to do. I mean, whatever you can do, whatever you can help us with, if you can help us with $10, $20, $25, I hope that our people can at least afford something to help us. I mean, give us something. And people who can afford more, we definitely need more. People who can afford the big contributions, we need the big contributions. We need it, and we need it badly. That's the most important thing. And the second thing is, of course, spreading the word about our videos. Very, very important. Help us on ZooTube when we put up videos. Please favorite, comment, and like the videos. If you can mirror the videos, better yet. That's also very important. Tell people about the videos. Promote them. Also, another thing you can do to help us, help promote our Facebook page. We have a new Facebook page that we're announcing. We're changing the Romney Obama debate page. Remember the Romney Obama debate page we created? That's changed now. It's now Romney Ryan 2012. And Shlomo has created such a great picture. I mean, it looks so professional. It looks more professional than Romney's own page, than the Romney campaign's page. And the Romney campaign has hundreds of millions of dollars. And our page actually looks, the picture that Shlomo did, in my opinion, looks better than the picture that the Romney campaign did. I mean, Shlomo does such a great job. He does all this by himself. He's just such a wonderful, and he works so hard. He worked so hard and took such a huge pay cut. And the sacrifices he's making, you can't imagine the sacrifices he's making. He left his home, moved thousands of miles away to live all alone, and took a 50% pay cut, and works sometimes 16, 18 hours a day. All this doesn't just get done by itself. It's very, very hard work, and to do this type of professional work that Shlomo does. And he does this because he loves Israel and Jewish people, and he loves the righteous Gentiles, he loves America, and he wants to make this a better world. And so please, help us promote the videos, help promote our great-looking Romney Ryan 2012 Facebook page. You can see the sticky thread in the general discussion section of our forum for more information. Help promote that magnificent page that we've now set up there. The more likes, the better. And, you know, you can comment on it and debate on it. It's always good. And, of course, comment and be active on our forum. When our forum is active, you open threads on our forum. You respond to threads and respond to people's posts on the forum. when you open Threads and when you post on the forum, you make the forum more attractive and more appealing for people to want to join. We get thousands of visitors on our forum. People who, for whatever reason, just visit out of curiosity but don't actually join. I think some of them are Gentiles who don't join because they think this is a Jewish organization, I don't really fit, which isn't true. I mean, we're an organization, the organization in Israel, because it's in the Hebrew language, is basically a Jewish organization, because basically Jews are the only people that speak Hebrew nowadays, or almost the 99% of the people who speak Hebrew are Jewish. But the English language forum is a forum for people, Jews, non-Jews, people from all backgrounds who want to make this a better world. We all work together. And I know that there are many, many people who come to the forum, thousands of people who visit our forum. We see the stats, and you can see the stats, by the way. You can see some of the stats. Some of the stats are actually listed on the front page. You see thousands of visitors on the forum, and many of them come because of curiosity, because they see us on ZooTube, and because they see from Google that we're anti-Obama, and they see our videos. And they, you know, people come to the forum, thousands of them, but they don't join. I think some of them for the reason I mentioned, because they think it's only a Jewish forum. And then other people, because of apathy, indifference, or they don't want to join, or they feel shy, or whatever the reasons are. We do have people who don't join our forum, but who contribute money to the organization. We have people like that. They, of course, that's a good excuse. That we'll accept. If there are people out there that are giving us money but are not helping with the videos and not joining the forum, that's fine. That's fine, because giving money is the most important thing to keeping our organization functioning and to helping our organization. So that's fine. Those people are fine. They're doing great. But there are other people who, you know, don't join for whatever reasons. The forum, I think, is a pleasant place and an inviting place. I know sometimes we have some exchanges there that we, you know, we got to be careful and we got to be polite to people when we have differences of opinion. But let's make the forum an inviting place, and let's try to get those thousands of people who visit our forum on a regular basis, let's try to persuade them to want to join up. Let's make the forum an inviting place, because we have more people who go to the forum and read our posts but are not members than people who are actually members. Far more. So, maybe because we're a controversial organization, I don't know. But that's how it works out. And people have nothing to be worried about. I mean, they're not going to they don't have to join under their real name. We're not asking people to give their name and address and phone number and social security number. We don't want that information. We wouldn't want, if somebody tried to do that, I would immediately remove their post. Somebody tried to join our forum yesterday, and his name was actually his telephone number, because he wants to challenge people to debate him who disagree with him. I wouldn't accept him as a member. I will not accept him as a member putting his telephone number up there. I will not. If you're going to put personal information, with all the cuckoo people that we've had, Joshua Rosenberg and Stephen Weigang and all these crazy people out there, Peace Now and all these other people that have been, you know, that target members of our forum, if you're going to put personal information there, I'm not going to allow you to do that, because I have to protect you. Even if you don't understand it, I am responsible. I have to protect you. I have to try to protect our members. I mean, we're all in this together. We're all brothers and sisters. We're all in this together, and I have to try to protect you. So we wouldn't accept personal information. You're just basically, you're putting up your, you know, you're basically putting up your username. Anyway, I'm happy about this Paul Ryan selection. And yes, I am happy that we started this new Romney Ryan 2012 page. I'm excited about it. We have a chance here. Help us promote our Facebook page. Help us promote the videos. Help us financially. And by the way, I mentioned credit cards. You don't have to do it with your credit card. If you don't want to, you can also, just as good, and we have many wonderful people that do this as well, can send checks and money orders and cash donations to our post office box. Our post office box, of course, is is you can find our post office box on the main page. It's JTF PO Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York 11365. Our post office box, you can easily find out what our post office box is. And if you want to send checks, money orders, or cash donations to that address, that also is very, very welcome and is just as good. There's no difference between that and the credit card. For us, there's no difference. That's also very helpful. So help us. Help us and get involved. Get active. This is an important time. Israel may be on the... God willing, I wish Israel was on the verge of attacking Iran already. If that happens, we're needed more than ever to stand up for that action, because we're the ones that have been pushing for that for 20 years. On every issue, JTF is the organization that's been right from the start. We've been right from the start on these issues. And so this is the time to be active if we want to make this a better world, if we want to be idealists. Anyway, I thank our great members, and think about how you can get involved and become more active. It's something very good and positive for your life. Believe me, it's good for you as well. It's a good and positive thing in your life to be active as well. Now, we're going to do what I love doing, which is going to our great questions from our great JTFers. And speaking of great JTFers, the first question is from our fantastic global moderator, the great Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic. Dr. Dan now writes, and I quote, "Give us your synopsis on the whole Chick-fil-A fiasco. These liberals, quote-unquote, don't understand the freedom of speech if you disagree with them," unquote. Absolutely, Dr. Dan. You know, this thing really just shows the degree of crypto-fascist censorship that we have. We've seen this. We see this every day on YouTube, on Google, on Facebook. If you dare tell the truth, you're liable to get thrown off. I mean, we actually have to self-censor. We've already learned what we can say and what we can't say. That's why 99% of our videos now stay up on ZooTube. Even if people do flag them, 99% of our videos now stay up. 99% of our accounts are untouched now because we've learned how to self-censor ourselves. But if we could tell the real truth and we didn't have to go through all this nonsense, this politically correct nonsense, believe me, we'd have far more views than we have now. Far more. We're reaching hundreds of thousands of people. We've reached altogether with all of our videos more than 1.5 million people on ZooTube. We have thousands of accounts. But we would have reached far more. Far more. We'd be a mass movement by now. If we didn't have to be politically correct, and if we could put it all on one page, and if we could put it all on one account and didn't have to go through all these crazy loops that we have to go through. But this is what you deal with when you deal with evil people who are intolerant of other positions. And the so-called gay movement are the most intolerant, vicious people on the... You can't get more vicious and evil and intolerant than these individuals. And they claim that all they're asking for is tolerance. They're not asking for tolerance. They're forcing themselves upon society and forcing you to accept and like their perversions. You are not allowed to believe in the Bible. If you believe in the Bible, you're a homophobe. If you believe that homosexuality is an abomination, which is what God says, if you believe in God and believe in what God says and follow what God says, you now are called a bigot and a homophobe. And you're not allowed. They won't allow you to speak. They'll boycott you and they'll try to silence you. And they'll do everything they can to destroy you. If you dare say that you believe in what the Bible says. You're not even allowed to believe in the Bible anymore or even express your views anymore. It's just absolutely obscene, and if we don't fight this phenomenon and defeat this phenomenon, you can imagine what a nightmare this world is going to become. Anyway, thank you very much, Dr. Dan. Great point, and I'm glad you raised that subject. And now, the great Yimach Shmo to Obama, what a great JTFer. Yimach Shmo to Obama has done so many videos for us and done so much to help us. What a great person. We love you, Yimach Shmo to Obama. You're a great JTFer. Yimach Shmo to Obama now writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, Did you hear about the shooting incident in a movie theater in Colorado? What is your take on James Holmes, Yimach Shmo, is he insane, unquote? Well, obviously he's insane, but, you know, you could be insane and evil. He knew enough to plan in cold-blooded way how he was going to murder that little girl and all the other people that he murdered in that movie theater. He's a monster. He went into a movie theater and murdered a little girl. What did that little girl do to him? Yeah, I don't care what the reason is. He should be put to death and burn in hell after that. Of course he's sick. But that doesn't excuse being evil. Doesn't excuse his behavior at all. Anyway, it's another example of the breakdown in society that we have. Because there's a breakdown in moral values and family values. Anyway, thank you very much, Yimach Shmo, to Obama. And now we go to the great Me'er Kat. The great Me'er Kat now writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, when Assad is toppled, Syria could devolve into an even bloodier civil war because it's Sunnis versus everyone else. May Syria be as weak as possible, unquote. Amen. Syria should be as weak as possible. I don't know if it's going to devolve into an even bloodier... I think this is pretty bloody right now. I mean, I think it's pretty good right now what's going on there. They should continue what they're doing now. I mean, they're slaughtering each other, these Muslim beasts. And so, you know, better that they kill each other than murder us, God forbid. So, you know, I'm very pleased with what they're doing right now. Of course, it's possible that civil war can continue even after Assad is out of power. Who knows what would happen? But my guess is that as long as Assad is there, it's going to be even bloodier. That's my guess. Anyway, thank you, Me'er Kat. And now, the one and only Mo, another great JTFer, writes, and I quote, have you ever had someone come up to you in person to say that they recognized you and either loved you or hated you, unquote? Oh, sure, many times. Many, many times. People recognize me all the time. I had a television show in New York with a large audience. And sometimes people recognize me from the videos. I even get Israelis who are visiting New York. I've been stopped on the street by Israelis who are visiting New York or other Israelis who see my Hebrew videos. I had a group of Israeli kids, Israeli teenagers, stop me and say, Ata Chaim ben Pesach? You're Chaim ben Pesach? They said to me. They recognized me right away from the Hebrew videos. They've seen my Hebrew videos. And of course, I told them yes, and they spoke, and, you know, and so, of course, so you can imagine, and then in Queens, where we had a television show, of course, a lot of people know me and recognize me, sure. And sometimes people stop me, you know, they want to tell me, how much they can't stand me. This one, just this past week, this one woman said to me, she started using obscene language. She was in her car, and she said, I saw your television show, and she gave me the finger, and you started using obscene language. A Jewish woman, you know, gave me the obscene language and started using the F word and cursing at me. And then there was, and then just to get, I'm giving you the negative examples. And then there's another, there was this black couple who said, you have very racist videos against President Obama, very racist. Now, well, I didn't say anything. I don't give a damn what they think. Who cares what they think? They can go screw themselves. I don't care what these Jew-hating animals who support Obama think. I couldn't care less. And of course, but most of the time, most of the people who recognize me tell me that they agree with me and that they like what we're saying and like what we're doing. Because I guess most of the people who don't like somebody, usually they just don't say anything. Usually they just, you know, go by in silence, usually. I guess that's human nature. So most of the people who stop me and say they recognize me when it does happen, most of those people are actually people who are positive. But once in a while, just so happens this week there are two different negative incidents, which is unusual because the negative incidents are pretty rare. But actually this past week there happened to be two. I think they were both related to our anti-Obama stuff. You know, people who, I mean, I live in a city, New York City, which voted over 80% for Obama. In 2008, over 80% of New York City residents voted for Obama. So obviously, my message is not very popular in a place like New York City. But I couldn't care less. We're going to tell the truth, whether people like it or not. And it's a badge of honor to stand up for the truth. And to stand up for the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Anyway, thank you very much, Mo. And now we go to the great Tag Mechir Tzedek, another great JTFer who writes, and I quote, "Why should we be thankful to God for taking us out of Mitzrayim, Mitzrayim is Egypt, when it was He who put us there in the first place? Isn't it like someone being thrown and then, okay, your question didn't get finished, I think, because it was probably too long for the program that we have. I mean, because we limit the size of the questions now, the new program that Shlomo installed limits the size of the questions. But I understand the point you're making. You know, God put us in Mitzrayim in Egypt to begin with, and so we should thank Him that He took us out of there after he did that. Why should we be thankful to Him? And the answer is because we should be thankful for everything God does. Everything God does is for the good. It's right and it's justified and it's moral and it's correct. When God punishes us, it's for tikkun, it's for correction. It's to correct us. The purpose is correction. We thank God for correcting us. Jews actually thank God when they're punished because God is correcting our behavior and teaching us. And that shows His love for us. He's teaching us to change our ways. If you don't care about somebody, then you don't try to correct them. It's like a parent that doesn't discipline their kids. If they have a kid that acts like a brat and misbehaves and does terrible things and the parent never disciplines them, that kid is going to grow up and to be a monster. But if the parent does discipline them and makes it clear that they're not going to tolerate it and punishes the kid when the kid does wrong, of course, does it always in a way where the kid knows that the parent still loves the child, that is really the highest form of love. You know, we always had this saying when the father would say when he's about to hit his son, this hurts me more than it hurts you. This is going to hurt me more than it hurts you. And although people laugh at that saying, it actually is true. A parent who truly loves his son, if he has to hit his son, if he has to smack his son, I can assure you that a true father who truly loves his son, it hurts the father more than it hurts the son. Sometimes you got to. Of course, that should be a last resort. You don't want to hit your kids. You don't want to, you know, that should be a last resort. It should be very rare when a parent has to do that. But there's some kids that just don't listen, and no matter what you do, and you know, you got to stop them from doing things that are self-destructive or that can hurt other people. Sometimes you have no choice. And so, when God does things to correct us, we should be grateful. It shows that He loves us. It shows He wants to bring us back and teach us. When God teaches us because He loves us and corrects us and brings us back on the right path, it is something to be grateful for. Because when we went down into Egypt and we suffered, there's no question we suffered in Egypt. By the way, the reason we suffered in Egypt, the reason we faced the punishment that we faced in Egypt, we weren't slaves at first. We became slaves because we refused to go back to Israel. We could have avoided it. We didn't want to go back to Israel. When the time came when the Jews could have gone back to Israel, when the drought was over and the hunger was over, and the Jews could have gone back to Israel, and Joseph was the viceroy of Egypt, the Jews, and the Jews had tremendous power, and even after Yosef, the Jews still had tremendous power in Egypt. They could have gone back. At that point, they could have gone back, and they were supposed to go back. They were supposed to leave at that point. They only went to Egypt to save their lives because there was a tremendous drought and tremendous famine. But once that was over, they should have gone back. They didn't want to. They wanted to stay in Egypt, which is a terrible, terrible sin. And that's why. And the Jews wanted to mix in and become part of Egypt and part of Egyptian culture. That's why God punished them and made them slaves. The Levites were not slaves. The tribe of Levi Shevet Levi, the Levites, were not slaves. You know why they were not slaves? Because they didn't do idolatry and they didn't do the other evil things in Egypt that the other tribes were doing. So what God did was all just and all designed to bring the Jews back and make the Jews do the right thing. God does demand that we be righteous. He does not tolerate evil and immoral and decadent behavior and all of the commandments and all of what God demands of us is for our own good. And so we should be grateful for everything that He does, for what's good and for what seems like it's bad, but it's actually in the end also for the good. Anyway, thank you very much, Tag Mechir. And now we go to the great Brennan fan. Brennan fan, another fantastic member, over 18,000 posts. Over 18,000 posts. And Brennan fan has not always had access to a computer. And still he's gotten in over 18,000 posts. What a great JTFer. Brennan fan writes now, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, please tell the true story of Rabbi Mohammed of Arutz Sheva and why he became a capo. Thank you, unquote. Well, anyway, Brennan Fan is referring to Zalman Melamed, the rabbi of Beit El, who also is also the owner of Arutz Sheva. And Zalman Melamed agreed to the expulsion of dozens of Jewish families in the Ulpana district of Beit El. And the reason he agreed is because he was promised that they're going to build alternative homes in the middle of Beit El in exchange for destroying the homes in this particular area. So they're basically, he's going along with the idea that the Israeli government has a right to tell Jews where they're going to live and to destroy their homes against their will and to claim that the land that they have belongs to the Arabs. He's accepting that premise in exchange for a real estate deal, because the real estate in Beit El, the value of homes in Beit El would go up because the government promised in exchange. They knew who they were dealing with, so they bribed him. They promised him, okay, we'll build some apartment buildings here, which will raise the value of your homes in your community in Beit El. So it was a bribery. And it was a disgrace. And when Hilltop Youth, when our people, when some of the Hilltop Youth went there to resist the expulsion anyway, Zalman Melamed's followers in Beit El physically attacked our people, the Hilltop Youth people. And these are just kids. These were just teenagers. These were 15, 16, 17-year-old kids, courageous kids. There were just a few of them decided they're going to fight the expulsion. They were expelled by the residents of Beit El, who were supposed to be settlers. They were expelled because they didn't want any trouble. They don't want any trouble. They want to make sure they get their little real estate deal. They don't want any protests over the land of Israel and the right of Jews to live in the land of Israel. Disgrace. What a disgrace. And then Zalman Melamed and his wife, Shulamit Melamed, wrote on all types of terrible things against the Hilltop Youth on Arutz Sheva, calling them mentally imbalanced. I mean, terrible things they wrote about them. They're mentally unbalanced because they think Jews should resist when they come to expel them from their homeland. They're mentally unbalanced because they think that we shouldn't accept the premise that this land really belongs to the Arab Muslim Nazis who forge papers and commit fraud. That Zalman Melamed himself said that everything that the Arabs were claiming was a fraud and a lie. And then Zalman Melamed is willing to accept these lies just in exchange for a real estate deal to enrich himself. And so people say, no, you're not supposed to do that. The land of Israel is more important than that. It's too sacred for that. They're crazy because they say that? Disgraceful. Anyway, thank you very much, Brennan Fan. And you know what it goes to show, Brennan Fan? We are the voice of truth. Not Arutz Sheva. We are the voice of truth. You want the voice of truth? It's JTF and our Hebrew movement, Hayamin Amiti. And now we go to the great Brian. Oh, Brian is fantastic. Brian is such a great JTFer. The great Brian now writes, and I quote, what were some of your favorite movies, TV shows growing up, unquote. And by the way, before I answer Brian's interesting question, I'm saying to every single person here, you're a great JTFer, because you all are. You all are. I don't know. You know, I think I see all the, I know all of you, obviously. And, you know, we know each other for a while now on the forum. And I've gotten to know you, and you're just fantastic people. And, you know, I think I speak for everybody on the forum when I say that. Brian again says, and I quote, what were some of your favorite movies, TV shows growing up, unquote. Brian, I don't want to publicize the movies, the Hollywood movies that I watched growing up. I grew up in the 60s and 70s. Okay, when I was a kid, it was in the 60s and 70s. Because I'm an older guy now. I'm 55 years old. I'm already up there in age. So I would prefer, and even though the Hollywood movies that I saw and that I grew up with are mild by today's standards they'd be considered to be conservative. To me, they were still immoral. Now that I look back on it, at that time I didn't know any better. I was just a kid. But now that I look back on it, those movies and those TV shows were immoral then, and they were creating the ground. They were creating the circumstances, the atmosphere that would lead to the decadence we have today. You know, I don't even want to recall some of the movies. I don't want our members to go and publicize them, and then our members go and look at them and watch those movies. Again, even though those movies that I saw in the 60s and 70s that I grew up with, even though compared to today's garbage, they're probably considered to be very mild. I could tell you there are two movies that were not quality movies, that were very mediocre movies, that I think were almost prophetic in one way. We had Planet of the Apes. You remember in the late 60s there was a movie called Planet of the Apes. I think that turned into the story of urban America. That's the America of Barack Hussein Obama, Planet of the Apes. And then we had another movie called Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which, for me, became part of my life story. A lot of my life can be described as Close Encounters of the Third World. But those are mediocre movies. There were indeed much better, higher quality movies in terms of the quality of production and the imagination in the movies. But I just think that the movies... I think that the movies had a lot of immorality in them. And so I'd rather not publicize them. I hope you'll forgive me for that, Brian, for that reason. And yes, I have high standards now because, you know, now I'm trying to go by a Torah standard. As far as TV shows are concerned, they were also, the TV shows I saw in the 60s and 70s were also very immoral. I don't think they were particularly good, the TV shows. And they were also immoral. I mean, I remember, I'll give you one example, just to cite an example of a TV show that has long been off the air, that has been off the air now for more than 40 years, but was a huge show in the 1960s, in the 50s and in the 60s, The Ed Sullivan Show. Ed Sullivan and his wife Mary, who, by the way, was Jewish, they had a show called The Ed Sullivan Show. And his wife was behind the scenes. You never saw her on the air, but she played a role in influencing her husband, too. And that show was on every Sunday night. It was a huge program on TV at that time, every Sunday night. And it was a variety show, all types of variety entertainment. They had comedians, and they slowly started to introduce the dirty jokes. But they had comedians. I mean, by today's standards, it was very clean. But they had the comedians on. They had all types of acrobatic acts on, and they had the rock groups and singers, all types of singers from all types of music, and the rock groups. They really made the Beatles into the huge success that the Beatles became. And that show, that particular show, unfortunately, which I used to watch every Sunday night when I was a kid, that particular show, unfortunately, was promoting an atmosphere that eventually led to the drug culture and eventually led to the immoral stuff and all the immorality and decadence that we see today that's led to the breakdown of family life and the breakdown of society. But that's just an example of the type of programs that we grew up with in the 60s and 70s. Yes, it was more imaginative and creative than the garbage, the junk you see on TV today. Much more imaginative. The comedians were funnier. The music was a lot better. It was just much more entertaining and captivating than the real subhuman trash that we see on TV today. All of that is true. But the direction that they took the country in was bad. Anyway, thank you, Brian. And I hope you'll forgive me for not being more specific because for the reason I stated. And now we go to the great Israeli Hart, another great person on our forum. Israeli Hart now writes, and I quote, "Is Sikhism idolatry? They say they believe in one God, but if it's not the God of Israel, Hashem, wouldn't it still be idolatry?" Unquote. First of all, a great question. And first of all, I notice that reporters with the attack on the Sikh temple that took place from this neo-Nazi piece of garbage who attacked the Sikh temple, I notice that the media all refer to them as Sikhs. They say the Sikh temple, the Sikhs. I thought you called them Sikhs. I thought it's pronounced Sikhs. Am I wrong here? All the media keep calling them Sikh. I don't know. I always grew up thinking it was Sikhs. For years I heard Sikhs. I never heard Sikh calling them Sikhs. But I've heard numerous reporters in the past couple of weeks call them Sikhs instead of Sikhs. Just wondering about that. I don't know enough Israeli Hart about the Sikh religion to know if it's idolatry or not. I don't know enough about the religion. Obviously, by the way, if somebody believes in just one God, the God of the universe, obviously that's not idolatry, even if they don't know that it's the God of Israel. If they don't know it's the God of Israel, you know, that's unfortunate. And that's, you know, that's an important aspect of God that they don't understand or they don't know about. But if someone believes that there's just one God ruling over the whole world, and they don't put specific attributes, they don't attribute specific things to that God because he's all powerful. You know, it's like Maimonides, Rambam, teaches us that when we say God is good, God is great, God is kind, and God has compassion, and all of those things in reality are distortions because God is beyond all of those things. God is beyond all description. You can't say, oh, my God is big, my God is a million miles high, stands a million miles high, or a billion miles high. My God is so huge. You see this huge world? My God is even bigger than this huge world. That's actually an idolatrous statement to say that God is bigger than the whole world. That's actually an idolatrous statement. We use statements like that not to be idolatrous, but because we as human beings can't comprehend the infinite because we're finite. But to say, to give God any type of size is idolatry, is technically idolatry because there is no limit to God's size. There's no such thing. God is way beyond any of those things. Way beyond. But again, I don't know enough about the Sikh religion to say if it's idolatry or not. And by the way, I just so that people feel a little more comfortable, because I'm basically saying you can't describe God in any way, that's technically true. But in our own finite little way, we're allowed to say certain things. For instance, it says the hand of God. God doesn't have hands. God is perfect. God is perfect. He has no physical... If a being has hands or anything physical, any physical attributes, that's a limitation. God has no limitations. So when it says the hand of God the hand of God was against him, or God was angry, or God is jealous of other gods, I mean, this is all an attempt to give us the ability to understand in our own finite mind. None of those things in reality apply to God. God is above and beyond any of that, but we can't possibly comprehend God. We know he exists. We know what he commands us to do. But we cannot comprehend him. We can't. He is infinite. We can't possibly comprehend an infinite concept because we are finite. Anyway, thank you very much, Israeli Hart. And now we go to the great Selhar. who's a great member on both the English and Hebrew forums, and the great Szilard writes, and I quote, "Why did back in 2007 the CIA come up with a report that said Iran had stopped their nuclear weapons program? Isn't this high treason?" Unquote. Absolutely. Absolutely, because the CIA always gets it wrong. And the CIA always comes out with these left-wing reports and left-wing analysis of things. The CIA predicted that the Shah was not going to be overthrown in the late 1970s, when the Shah of Iran was overthrown eventually by Ayatollah Khomeini and by the Islamic Nazis in Iran. But the CIA predicted he wasn't going to be overthrown. The CIA is consistently wrong. It is there. If there's any agency that's an example of a complete waste of money, it's the CIA. Completely wrong on one thing after another. And a lot of their reports are skewed by their bias, because who becomes CIA agents? Are these patriots who are trying to help their country? Please, no way. The people that are recruited for the CIA to become CIA agents are generally Ivy League students who go to left-wing Ivy League universities, the most left-wing universities, and then they join the CIA because it's a nice thing to have on your resume that you work for the CIA. But these are, generally speaking, these are people who went to left-wing universities. They're graduates of left-wing universities. Those are the people that are usually accepted to be agents for the CIA or to work for the CIA. So, yeah, there's a lot of left-wing bias in there, and so their reports, in my opinion, shouldn't be taken seriously. They have a history of consistently being wrong. They were wrong in Vietnam. They were wrong in Korea. They were wrong about the Cold War. They were wrong about the Soviet Union eventually falling. They were wrong about Soviet weapons development. They were wrong about India and Pakistan developing nuclear bombs. They have been wrong consistently. They are consistent. They're consistently wrong. And they were wrong about Iran in 2007. That's obvious. Anyway, thank you very much, Szilard. And now we go to the great EB22, who writes, and I quote, "Can Mitt Romney realistically become much tougher and aggressive against BHO, even if he fires his meek campaign managers?" Unquote. He's certainly not going to become as tough and aggressive as I think is needed. I don't think he's going to be as tough and aggressive as I would like to see, and as all of us would like to see, EB. That's not going to happen. That's why JTF is so important. We got to get a message out there that I wish the Romney campaign was, or at least some of these independent PACs, I wish somebody was doing what we're doing. But they're not. They're not. They're all afraid to do it. They're all politically correct, and they're all afraid. They're all afraid there's going to be a backlash, and the independents aren't going to like it, and the moderates aren't going to like it. What nonsense. If Ronald Reagan had thought like that, Jimmy Carter would have beaten Ronald Reagan. I mean, just nonsense. I have noticed, though, that Romney is hitting a little bit harder now that Paul Ryan is with him. Paul Ryan seems to be hitting a little bit harder. So I was happy to see at least a little more of a push against Obama, but it's all on the economic issues and the debt and unemployment and so on. And, you know, they're not hitting him on the Islam issue and on the other issues, which I think are even more serious. But in any event, EB, we got our work cut out for us. We got to do everything we can, because we've got to bring that message to the American people. Otherwise, nobody else will. And by the way, EB, look at our inventory of anti-Obama videos. I mean, we are creating an inventory, a catalog of anti-Obama videos that cover every major issue that the Romney campaign and the Republican Party and the PAC should be covering against Obama. We are making the case and doing it very effectively. What a tragedy. What a tragedy that we don't have more funds to really bring this message to everybody. What a better world this would be if we could. Anyway, thank you very much, EB. And now we go to the great West Coast JTF. God bless you, West Coast JTF. West Coast JTF, initiated the great website, jtfarchive.org, where you can see JTF programs, old JTF programs, archived. going back for years of program, years of our programming, some of our greatest programs. And again, that's at jtfarchive.org. Fantastic website. West Coast JTF writes, and I quote, "What really happened in the USS Liberty incident in 1967, unquote. All right, great question. What happened was that the United States was spying on Israel. They were spying on Israel. They wanted to see if Israel was going to strike first. Egypt, Syria, and Jordan were all threatening. All the whole Arab world was saying they're going to push the Jews into the sea. They're going to exterminate the Jews. They had moved their armies already up to Israel's tiny borders, and they said, we're going to eliminate Israel. We're going to push the Jews into the sea. The United States was pressuring Israel not to strike first, not to defend herself. Fortunately, at that time, the Israeli government ignored the pressure of Lyndon Johnson, who was an enemy of Israel, by the way. They ignored Johnson's pressure and his threats, and they ignored the threats of Charles de Gaulle, who was the leader of France, and of the Soviets and others, and they did strike first. But the United States, before the war broke out in June of 1967, the United States wanted to know what Israel was going to do before, during, and after the war. And so the United States was actually spying on Israel. And Israel did not know that that's an American, even though the United States was spying, Israel didn't know that that was an American ship. Anybody who thinks that Israel would deliberately fire on a United States ship is insane. That's crazy. Okay, anyone who knows anything about Israel, Israelis make, forgive me for this expression, Israelis make in their pants every time an American leader sneezes. I mean, every time an American leader sneezes, all of Israel gets hysterical. Oh, what are they going to do? How's this going to affect our relationship? The thought that at a time like this, when they were facing the knife at their throat, that they would knowingly attack an American ship and kill American sailors, the thought that they would deliberately, knowingly do this is ridiculous. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And of course, every serious agency that investigated this concluded without any doubt that Israel had not intentionally done this. Obviously not. They thought that this was an Egyptian ship. They had no way, they had no idea that this was an American ship. And all the nonsense, well, they should have known, or we put some flag out, or that, baloney. Baloney. All the people who investigated it said that that's baloney. That was baloney. That wasn't true. And there was no way for Israel to know whether or not that ship was an enemy Egyptian ship coming to attack Israeli naval forces, or whether it was, or they assumed it was an Egyptian ship because there were Egyptian enemy ships in the area. And all of a sudden, an American ship goes in an area where there are lots of enemy ships. What do you expect Israel to do? Israel assumed that it was an Egyptian enemy ship. But the idea that Israel would knowingly fire on an American ship and kill American soldiers or kill American sailors, it's ridiculous. It's obscene. People who do knowingly murder Americans, Arab Muslims, the same anti-Semites who accuse Israel of doing this deliberately, which is so ridiculous, these same Nazi Jew-hating animals then exonerate and excuse Arab Muslim Nazis who knowingly murder Americans and brag about it and admit that they did it. And even after they admit that they do it, these same people say, no, 9/11 was not done by the Muslim terrorists. Muslim terrorists brag about it. The whole Muslim world was thrilled and was celebrating. That, they say, no, the Muslims weren't responsible. I mean, we all saw with our own eyes what the Muslims did. These same people then, who exonerate the Muslims after the Muslims brag and are dancing on television and promise to commit terrorist acts and then do commit terrorist acts and brag about it, and get arrested and caught committing terrorist acts, and brag about it, in their trials brag about it. And still, these same people, these same anti-Semites then say that the Muslims really are innocent, the Muslims didn't do it. But Israel, who obviously wouldn't do this, Israel they blame. Israel they find guilty of doing something which obviously Israel would never do. It's such a farce. Anyway, thank you very much, West Coast JTF. And again, Thank you for your great site, jtfarchive.org. And now we go to the great Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, "What city in Israel do you want to live in, and why would you choose that city?" Unquote. My favorite city would be Hebron, but I'm not married, and you have to be married and have they don't accept bachelors or single people in Hebron. They have their reasons. They have their religious reasons. It's a family city, and they want families there, which they have a right. You know, the Jewish section is for families, and they have a right for that, and I respect that decision. If I did get married, though, I would love to live in Hebron. Kiryat Arba, though, which is near the city of Hebron, does accept bachelors. So maybe that would be a good place. Another possibility is the eastern section of Jerusalem. Let me put it to you this way. I want to live where they say Jews are not allowed to live. I want to live in the hot spots where they say you're not allowed to go there. That's where I want to go. Where they say Jews can't live there, where it's a holy Jewish land, and all the self-hating Jews and the Jew haters say Jews are not allowed to live there. That's where I want to live. So that would be the hottest spots that I could think of would be Hebron, Kiryat Arba, and the eastern section of Jerusalem. And there are other places as well. I mean, there are other places as well, but those are nice examples of places where I would love to be. Anyway, thank you, Maimonides. And now we go to the great Say No to Islam, who writes, and I quote, "What is your insight on James Byrd incident that took place in 1998, Texas? All right, let's deal with that first, and then we have another question after that." Unquote. We'll take that question first. James Byrd was a black man who didn't do anything wrong to these people. These were three neo-Nazis. And these three Nazis, who had swastika tattoos and were outright Nazis, started beating him. They invited him. They said they were going to give him a lift in their car and picked him up on the road. And he was minding his own business, so he agreed to get in the car. And they then took him to a remote area, beat him and tortured him, and then tied him to the back of the car and started running the car with him tied to the back of the car. So in other words, he was murdered by being dragged on the back of the car, which is one of the most brutal ways you can be murdered. This is an ugly, vicious act that there's no excuse for, and obviously you know what I think of neo-Nazis. To the credit of the state of Texas, these three neo-Nazis were arrested. One has already been executed for this. A second one is on death row. Hopefully he'll be executed too. The third one was given life imprisonment because he cooperated in testifying against the other two, but he was given life imprisonment. But obviously this is a despicable incident. And now Say No to Islam writes, quote, "Also, what do you think of Steven Seagal?" Unquote. Well, I know that some people like him because he's into martial arts. And I like martial arts too. I mean, I happen to think martial arts is a positive thing. If righteous people get into martial arts, it's a positive thing. I think people should. Martial arts, boxing, all of that is very, very good. I think people should learn those things. Those are useful skills. I'm all for that. And it's also very healthy. It's also good exercise. And I'm very much a believer in exercise and cardiovascular activity. It's good for the heart. It's good for the body. I'm very much a believer in exercise, and it's good exercise, and it's also good for self-defense. He's into martial arts. Okay, that's fine. But he's also a leftist. He's with the animal rights, and he's with environmentalism, and he's with all types of... He's into all these leftist causes that I just can't stand. So what can I say? I mean, he's a successful actor and worth a lot of money. All these people that are successful and worth a lot of money, I always say to myself, what are they doing to make this a better world with all that God has given them? God gives them money. God gives them millions of dollars and power and money and fame. What do they do with that? Now, it's a question I ask. Anyway, thank you so much, Say No to Islam. And now we go to Edu, the great Edu, who writes, and I quote, "What is your opinion about Congressman Paul Ryan being chosen as the Republican VP candidate?" Unquote. Edu, you read my mind. That was my opening on the show this week. You read my mind. And basically what I said was that I'm relieved that he was picked, and I'm hopeful, God willing, that he will help the Romney Republican ticket be successful in November. And we have started, and Edu, we have started a Romney Ryan 2012 Facebook page. We've changed our old Romney Obama debate page to a Romney Ryan 2012 Facebook page, and we urge people to help us, and we're going to be promoting the Romney Ryan ticket as much as we can. Anyway, thank you, Edu. And now the great Ephraim writes, and I quote, "What should our game plan be if Obango wins? And if he loses, how should we handle the anti-conservative attacks?" Unquote. Ephraim, God forbid, and of course, I know you also say God forbid, we all do, God forbid, but of course it's very possible. It's very possible that Barack Hussein Osama can win re-election, God forbid. It's a serious threat. You know what we're going to do. We're going to do the best we can to resist his policies. In Israel, we're going to try to support the people who will resist the pressure. He's going to begin a massive campaign of squeezing Israel to commit national suicide, to surrender all the land, and we're going to begin a massive campaign. We're going to be in a campaign aimed at getting Israeli Jews to resist. And in America, we've got to resist his policies as best we can. It's not going to be easy because through executive order, you see what he's doing with gay marriage. He legalized all the illegal aliens. There are going to be millions of illegal aliens now that he's just legalizing through executive order. He's not even asking the Congress to change the law. He's relaxing all the welfare rules to eliminate the work, to eliminate the work requirement. Just on issue after issue, you see what he's doing. And this is in the middle of a very difficult re-election campaign. Can you imagine what this monster is going to do if he gets a second term and he doesn't have to face the voters again? We got a real, very serious enemy, and we will live to regret it if he is reelected, God forbid. Let's hope and pray that doesn't happen. If it does, of course, we're going to do the best we can. We're going to do the best we can to fight back. What else can we do? You ask, what will we do to handle the anti-conservative attacks if he loses? And I think what you're referring to is that obviously the Romney Ryan administration is going to come under immediate ferocious attack from the media and from the left. Yeah, that's going to happen. And again, we have to resist anti-conservative attacks. We're going to do the best we can to counteract any anti-conservative attacks, obviously. We do the best we can. Hopefully, we'll have the resources and the strength to be able to make a difference. Anyway, thank you so much, Ephraim. And now we go to the great Chicago Jew who writes, and I quote, "What is your opinion of the fact that Pastor James David Manning is not supporting Mitt Romney?" Unquote. Well, I'm sorry to see that. I like Pastor Manning, but doesn't mean I agree with him on everything. I'm sorry to see that. I'm very sorry to see that. I think he's making a big mistake. I don't know how anybody cannot support Mitt Romney against Barack Hussein Obama. I mean, the only sane thing to do is to do everything we can to stop Obama from getting reelected. I don't know how anybody could not do that. I don't understand it, but I like Pastor Manning. I've met with him a couple of times, and I think very highly of him. He's a very courageous person. He's a very smart person, very charismatic, a very good speaker. I really like him, but I completely disagree with him on this one. Anyway, thank you very much, Chicago Jew. And now we go to the great Kahana Was Right, BT. And the great Kahana Was Right writes, and I quote, "In footage of Obama's 'You didn't build that' speech, you can hear a chorus of mm-hmms in the background." Mm-hmm. Is this what a Farrakhan rally sounds like? Mm-hmm. 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 Yes, that is what they sound like. I first heard this when I was a child. I first noticed this. I used to listen because when I was a child, Martin Luther King was giving speeches. And I would listen to him, and I was just a little kid growing up, and I would hear Martin Luther King's speeches. And, of course, all the left-wing media was promoting him. And you'd hear Martin Luther King say, "And I want to say..." And some black woman in the crowd would scream out, "Oh, yes, Martin, you tell him, Martin. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you tell that white person. Oh, woo-woo." You know, and I would hear this, and I go, "What is this?" And you know, you'd hear him, he'd go to the Jews on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, who all want to pretend that they're British. And he'd go to the Jews on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, and they would all go, "Oh, bravo, bravo, oh, wonderful, wonderful, what a magnificent orator you are." You know. And this is after he gives some Ebonic speech there, and they're all going, bravo, bravo, like they just listened to the Queen of England. And then he would go right after that, after he got all the gelt, after he got all the money from the self-hating Jews, then he'd run to the Abyssinian Baptist Church in Harlem. Mm-hmm. And there he would go and he'd give his speech and saying, "I want to say, we're going to go to every lunch county in North Carolina and South Carolina and Alabama, Mississippi." And they'd all go, "Ooh, oh, Martin, you tell him, ooh, oh, yeah, ooh, you tell him, Martin, ooh." You know, and this is what I'd be hearing in the whole speech. This was his whole, this, you'd hear this during the speech, you'd hear, this is what you would hear. Anyway, and you know, Obama also speaks in Ebonics. When he's speaking to his own people, he also speaks in Ebonics, if you'll notice. He did see it. "You didn't build that. There's a whole lot of smart people out there. It ain't because you smart. You think because you smart. You not smart. All them white people think they smart. You think because you have a higher IQ that you built that business. You didn't build that business because you have a higher IQ. You know, we helped you build it. Black people built that business for you. Black people have done everything. Black people should get all the credit." You know, this is basically, you know, he speaks with that Ebonics, and he had, and that was what he was basically trying to say in that speech. And, you know, it's still pretty hard to digest that this person was actually elected president and might get reelected. It's pretty hard to believe. Pretty hard to believe what type of crazy country this is. Anyway, thank you, Kahana was right. And now we go to the great Dan Ben-Noach, our fantastic forum administrator. And need I say more? I mean, Dan Ben-Noach, I don't know how many of my Hebrew videos he has translated into English and just brought so much of our message to our English-speaking people. What a fantastic mitzvah that is. What a great, great, wonderful deed that is, that Dan Ben-Noach has been doing all this time. And of course, Dan opens up so many great threads on the forum, and just, you know, whenever you see Dan commenting and opening up threads, you know it's going to be good. Dan writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, please share your thoughts on Chris Christie and his recent iftar dinner with Hamas-linked Muslims at the New Jersey governor's mansion," unquote. Yeah, this happened a couple of days ago. This is just the latest episode from Chris Christie. He had a dinner with people who support Hamas, who were supporters of Hamas and Islamic terrorism, and he defends them and praises them. He gave a speech going through a long history of all the times he's defended Muslim terrorists and their supporters, how proud he is. And of course, the Muslims at this halal iftar dinner where they break the fast of the Ramadan, you know, after they finish praying for the destruction of the infidels. Chris Christie is so proud, and the Muslims, of course, they were thrilled to hear what he had to say. I don't understand. There are just certain evil people, Chris Christie, Hillary Sodom Arafat is like this also, who are in love with Muslims. They just love evil. They're attracted to evil. There are certain people who are just demonically attracted to evil. It's really incredible. They have this love affair with evil. Chris Christie, for some reason, just loves defending these evil people. He loves telling us how much we should accept the Muslim mosque at Ground Zero, and we should, and he appointed a Muslim terrorist judge to be a judge on the high court in the state of New Jersey, the Superior Court in the state of New Jersey, and when they questioned this guy for having been a volunteer attorney, he volunteered to defend the Muslim terrorists of 9/11 and other Muslim terrorists. It wasn't the 9/11, but it was other Muslim terrorists. And the state Senate committee that had to confirm him as a judge questioned him about this. Chris Christie exploded. this is Islamophobia, and how dare you, and he's sick and tired of this anti-Muslim attitude here. Oh, he's sick and tired of people with an attitude toward those who support Muslim terrorism. He, you know, I mean, what a sick person. It's like Hillary Saddam Arafat. She's another Muslim lover. She's another one obsessed with, just, she loves Muslims. She's obsessed with this. Remember, she said that her and her daughter are going to spend the next 3 years studying Islam, and then she ran around with a chador, you know, with that stupid thing on her head, visiting Muslim countries and Muslim and mosques. I mean, it's just unbelievable. There's certain sick people like this who just love evil. Anyway, thank you, Dan Ben Noach. And now we go to the great Gimatria, who writes, and I quote, "Hi Chaim, do you think Netanyahu hates Obama?" Unquote. Oh, I have no doubt that he does. Of course he does. Netanyahu, of course, is a disaster as well. But he knows that if Obama's reelected, he's going to be in for some unbelievable pressure. And he also knows that he doesn't stand up well under pressure. So he knows it's coming down. He knows what's coming if Obama's reelected. He knows that Israel's very survival is going to be in jeopardy because he doesn't have the guts to stand up to Obama. He knows that's coming. So there's no question when Romney visited Israel and visited with Netanyahu, you saw Netanyahu practically endorsed him. I mean, he said so many positive things about Romney. You know, obviously he wants Romney to win, obviously. Gimatria also writes, and I quote, "Also, what is the status of Fatso Arik Sharon?" Unquote. Well, he's not alive and not dead. He's just in limbo right now. You see, this animal, Arik Sharon, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro Shem Reshaim Yirkav, threw 10,000 Jews out of their homes in Gush Katif in northern Samaria, promised them he was going to immediately give them new homes, and of course that wouldn't excuse what he did, removing Jews from their homes so he could hand over the territory to the Muslim Nazi terrorists. But even that he didn't do. He threw them out of their homes. They lived in beautiful homes, threw them out of their homes, destroyed their homes, and then put them in trailers, in dirty, rundown trailers, living like animals, and kept them in limbo for years. So he decided to keep thousands of Jews in limbo that he turned them into refugees in their own country. God decided to put him in limbo. He's in limbo. He's not dead or alive. He's in limbo right now. But limbo is going to look good compared to where he's going in the next world. Because in the next world, Arik Sharon, he's going to be on a spit in the next world, spinning around under a huge fire. What can I say? He's not going to have the left-wing media to rescue him because they're also going to be on spits rolling around under a huge fire. And now Gimatria, on top of a huge fire, not under a huge fire, on top of a huge fire. He's going to be on a spit on top of a huge fire that's going to be roasting him. And the same thing is going to happen to his friends in the left-wing media and the Supreme Court, Bagatz, and all the other traitors that were part of the Gush Katif crime. And now Gimatria writes, or his son, the corrupt Omri, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro to Omri also. I don't know what Omri is doing right now. I mean, I know that he's trying to, weasel his way into some other business deal, because that's what Omri is all about. So I don't know exactly who he's with or what shenanigans he's pulling, what shtick he's pulling right now. But we know, we know what Omri is like. I mean, he's trying to rip somebody else off in some other slimy business deal, some other corrupt little scam that the Sharon family has always been involved in. Anyway, thank you very much, Gimatria. And now we go to, we was loving each other. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think I know what that refers to, but anyway, let me read the question from the great We Was Loving Each Other, who's also happens to be a great JTFer. And I quote, "Dear Chaim, any thoughts on how to deal with supervisors who have a terrible attitude, white or black?" Unquote. Well, when you get a supervisor and the supervisor gives you a bad attitude, that's pretty rough. First of all, I would I usually don't settle for speaking to a supervisor. I will get off the phone and then see if I could get to a different supervisor either later in the day or the next day. Try to speak to a different supervisor if I get a bad one. I'll try to, because sometimes, you know, if there's more than one supervisor, you can get somebody else who's more reasonable. The second thing that I would try to do, and I've done that sometimes successfully, the second thing that I would try to do is sometimes you can go over the heads of the supervisors. You can write to executives in the company and go over their heads if you're having someone who's really, really giving you a hard time. But you got to document everything because, you know, usually the supervisors, they trust what the supervisors say. So you got to document everything and, you know, it's got to be well presented if you do go to an executive, if you try to go over their heads. But I would try. You know, if you're being treated unjustly, then sometimes it may be worthwhile. It may be worthwhile. I mean, I don't know. Again, I don't know the circumstances of what you're referring to. So I don't want to advise you because you could also get yourself into trouble. If it's a job situation or something like that, you get yourself fired if you start fighting with the supervisor, going over their heads. So, you know, it depends on the circumstances. I mean, sometimes it's intolerable and you just got to act and you've got to fight back. Sometimes, you know, sometimes you have to make your choices. You have to make the choice and you have to decide what's the wise thing to do. But if your back is against the wall and you have nothing else you could do and you just got to go against this person because they did something terrible to you and there's just no other choice, you do have the option of going to another supervisor the next day, or you have or if that's not reasonable, you have the option of going above their heads. I mean, those are options that exist if your back is really against the wall. Anyway, thank you very much. We was loving each other. Mm-hmm. And now the great Chai writes, and I quote, "A Dvar Torah on the Parasha and Haftarah, please," unquote. Okay, great question, great request. This week's parasha is Parashat Ekev. And here, Hakadosh Baruch Hu means the Holy One, blessed be He. That's really the more common way of saying Hashem, of how we say God in Hebrew. Hakadosh Baruch Hu means the Holy One, blessed be He. Hakadosh Baruch Hu, through Moshe Rabbeinu, through His servant Moses, Moses our teacher, Hakadosh Baruch Hu explains that there will be reward if we fulfill God's mitzvot, if we fulfill God's commandments. Now, the question is this, and God explains some of the details of how we're going to be rewarded and what He's going to do for us if we do what he commands us to do. So the question comes up, but what if we don't see that reward all the time? I mean, sometimes we see people do good things and still bad things happen to them, and sometimes we have bad people and good things happen to them. How come we have this situation? And the answer is, you have to have that in this world to a certain extent, in order to maintain Bechira Chofshit, in order to maintain free will. If God immediately punished everyone who did wrong and immediately rewarded everyone who does the right thing, there'd be no free will left. If immediately, when you do something good, you get a reward, everybody would only do good. If immediately, the minute you do something wrong, you get punished, nobody would ever do wrong again. God wants this to be a world where we have free will, where we earn. Then we're not earning anything. Then we're being forced, basically, to do good. But God wants us to actually, out of our own free will, earn the reward that He wants to give us. And so in this world, we don't always see the good that God intends to do for us, or sometimes we don't understand it. Sometimes God does do good for us in this world, and we don't understand the good that He's doing for us. However, one thing every Jew and every righteous Gentile should have no doubt about, and that's what this parasha is really, is the deeper message in this parasha, in this week's parasha. There is no doubt that if you do good, you do something good, even if you don't see immediate results, there is no doubt that the day will come when you will be rewarded for every good thing you've done. And there is no doubt that you will be punished for every bad thing you have done. Midah keneged midah, which means measure for measure, on Yom Hadin, on the Day of Judgment. There is no doubt. Now, God is merciful, and so He rigs the rules in favor of the righteous. If the righteous, you know, He has pity on the righteous and He forgives some things. But there is no doubt that it is never worth it to do wrong. Even if something is very tempting, and you think that you're going to get something out of it, you figure, it's not going to be that bad. You can be sure that whatever pleasure you got out of doing something that was wrong, you will wind up losing. In the long run, you will lose far, far more than any temporary little thing you may think you can gain by doing something wrong, if you're tempted to do something wrong. And the opposite is also true. When it comes to doing good, you can be sure that for every good thing you do, you will be rewarded, and the reward will be magnified. You will be rewarded and then some, many times over when you do good, many times over beyond our current understanding every time you do good. That there is no question about. So it is always worth it to do good. It is always worth it to obey God's commandments. And it is always worth it not to do, it is always worth it not to do bad things. Always. Always. In the end, we have to have emunah shlema, perfect faith, complete faith, that the good things we do will be rewarded eventually, one way or another. And the bad things we do will lead to punishment one way or another. And that should be something that should guide our lives and guide our very beings. Because there is no doubt that that is true. No doubt. And the reward is way beyond our imagination, many times over what we would even expect. And the punishment is also a lot worse than what we would expect if we do bad things, God forbid. So it is definitely, definitely always worth it to do the right thing. Always worth it. And now Chai writes... asks about the Haftarah. The Haftarah, by the way, the Parashah is the portion of the Torah that we read every week, and which we divide every week. We divide the Torah into different portions, and we read a portion every week until we read the entire Torah throughout the year. And now, with each Parashah, we have what we call a Haftarah. And this week's Haftarah is from the prophet Isaiah. So we read sections from the prophets together with the Parashiyot from the Torah. The Torah is the first five books of Moses with the 613 commandments. Anyway, this week's Haftarah is Vatomer Tzion, it's called Vatomer Tzion, which is the prophet Isaiah, Yeshayahu, and it's chapter 49, verse 14. And here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Blessed One, the Holy One, Blessed Be He, which is another way of saying God in Hebrew, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, promises never to forsake or leave Israel. It starts off by saying, Tzion, Vatomer Tzion, God, Zion will say, Zion being the Jews, will be Israel, that the Jews say, God has abandoned me. God has abandoned us and God has abandoned me. That's what it starts off by saying. And God responds then in the following verses of how he will never abandon Israel, and he will destroy all of Israel's enemies. And even if it seems that way temporarily because God is correcting bad behavior, God will never abandon Israel. God's covenant with Israel is eternal. This is for all of the churches what we call replacement theology, those who believe in replacement theology, that the Jews are no longer the chosen people, that God abandoned them because they sinned, which is complete nonsense. God never will abandon Israel. God's covenant with Israel is eternal. And that's something that we see over and over again in the Bible. That's a theme that is clearly repeated over and over again in the Bible. No matter what, God will always be with Israel. God promised that to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. God promised that the covenant would be Brit Olam, which means an eternal covenant. Le'olam Ba'ed, forever and ever. And there will never be an end to that covenant. And we see in our own day, 2,000 years after the Jews were expelled, God brings them back to their land and is fulfilling all the great prophecies. So obviously God didn't abandon the Jews. And Israel was not replaced. The original Israel was brought back to the original land of Israel, proving that no one replaced Israel. So God promises he will never forsake Israel, and he will destroy Israel's enemies, and he will comfort us, and he will bring us all the promises and great things that he promised to bring us, and that day will yet come. That's the Haftarah for this week. Anyway, thank you so much, Chai. And now, the great Gam Bashan v'Gam Gilad, who is very active on our Hebrew forum, and is also active on our English forum, writes, and I quote, "Hello, dear Chaim, please give your best perush to the pasuk." Oh, Gam Bashan, it's not showing on my computer. I'm getting gibberish here. I'm not getting the Hebrew characters on my computer. I'm getting gibberish. I don't know what was written here. I assume you wrote something in Hebrew, but for some reason I'm getting gibberish. I don't know why. It may be that there was you know why this might have happened. Sometimes there's one character that's off on the English forum, and if you try to write something in Hebrew, it distorts the whole sentence. The whole sentence here, I'm not getting any of it in Hebrew. I'm getting the whole sentence is gibberish on my computer. So I can't read the pasuk. Pasuk means the verse. And perush, when he says, please give your best the perush. Perush means the meaning or interpretation to the pasuk. Pasuk means the verse. Unfortunately, I can't, Gam Bashan. Maybe you can, I don't know, maybe we can redo this next week. I don't know why the Hebrew. Oh, I know why there's a problem, because you were probably using nekudot. Probably because of the nikud. If you use nikud, Gam Bashan, certain types of nikud are not, don't print. Because of the crazy forum that we have, this forum that we have, this forum system that we have, and nothing we can do about it. Some of the nikud, when you print with nekudot, some of that does not print. So if you could give me if you could give it to me next time without the nikud, without the nekudot, I think we can give our perush if Bezrat Hashem, Besiyata Dishmaya, for the pasuk. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry, Gam Bashan. Okay, and now the great LKZ writes, and I quote: God forbid it does, but please provide your advice on what the forum will do and what citizens will need to do if Obama is elected. God forbid. Unquote. I'm saying God. I'm adding God forbid again. I think they need to do the same thing they need to do no matter what happens. I think they need to help JTF get bigger and stronger so we could resist his policies. If he wins, God forbid, we got to resist his policies. And even if he doesn't win, we still got a lot of very tough challenges ahead of us. But of course, if he wins, it's much worse. But the best thing to do is to be active with us so we can do the best we can to resist his policies. Anyway, thank you so much, LKZ, and I want to thank everybody on the forum for all the great questions. I really enjoyed, as I always do, doing the program this week. And until next week, I look forward to it. Till next week, Shalom.